Work is in the news again. Last week, the Jimmy Reid Foundation, which is a Scottish think tank, produced a report calling for Scotland to adopt a 30-hour week. I don't know about Scotland, but I'm guessing if I asked this morning, would there be support for that here? There'd probably be quite a few hands in the air, okay? The proposal of this is a left-wing think tank, obviously, and Jimmy Reid was a trade union leader in Scotland, and the foundation is named after him, proposing the idea of a 30-hour week. Now, it's not entirely a new idea, because in 1930, the famous economist John Maynard Keynes prophesied that by 2030, that's just not so far away now, by the year 2030, we would have solved the world's economic problems and a 3 or 4 day week would be sufficient for everyone. Don't know how good a prophet John Maynard Keynes was, but that's what he said anyway. Okay, so it's a long time before the Jimmy Reid Foundation thought 3-4 days a week should be enough. John Maynard Keynes was saying that in 1930. Of course, not everyone agrees. This is Murdo Fraser. He's a Conservative member of the Scottish Parliament. He described the idea as, quote, "This is just more cloud cuckoo land thinking." But right now in this city, in Gothenburg, in Sweden, the city council have announced a 1-year experiment with a 30-hour week for city workers. Okay, so now would be a good time to move to Sweden. And in France, the socialist government, not Sarkozy's government, the previous government, passed a law which said that in industry you could only work for 35 hours a week. You weren't allowed to work any longer than that. As soon as Sarkozy came to power, he scrapped it. Here's the interesting thing. Most businesses have actually continued the practice because it was such a success. Businesses found that in a shorter working week, they got better productivity from their workers. So actually, most businesses have voluntarily kept it on. What do you learn from all this geekery? Work is a complicated thing. It isn't a simple equation, you know? Getting people to work longer doesn't necessarily mean they do more. Getting people to work shorter doesn't necessarily mean that you can afford it. It's a complicated set of questions. And we were thinking a bit about how as Christians we should relate to that set of circumstances on a day-to-day basis. And towards the end of March, we talked on the first Sunday that we looked at the subject, we talked a bit about what the Bible has to say about work. And we learned a number of things about it. For example, we learned that there is a pattern for work. And the pattern is actually God. We discovered that God is actually more like Mr. Bates than he is like Lord Grantham, who sits about all day and has other people running around to do the work for him. We discovered that God likes to get hands-on. He likes to do stuff for himself. So he's really much more like this man than this man. There's a pattern for work. And then secondly, not only that, we discovered that there's a need for work. Work is something that we need to do, whether paid or not. Somebody needs to work to earn money for our homes, to support our family. But even if we do unpaid work, we do it because there is a basic need in us to do that. We need to do useful things. We also discovered that work is a calling. Work is not the purpose of our lives, but it helps us to fulfill that purpose. And that's why it's important. So we learned those things as general principles about work. But today what we want to think about, as we're doing in each of these three sections, we thought about family, then we're thinking about work, and then next Sunday we're beginning to think about society. In each case, we're looking at what the Bible and what God has to say about this area of our lives, and then secondly, how we can encounter hostility as believers in that context. We thought about that with home and family. Today we're going to think about that with work. Work is a place which can be hostile for the believer. Jesus said, "I'm sending you out as sheep among wolves." And I want to look at how work can be a hostile place in a number of ways. Here's the first. Work can be a hostile place personally. All of us want to be liked. And it's tough if we find ourselves in an environment where we're not liked or not wanted. That's a tough situation to be in. It can happen, of course, for all sorts of reasons. It can happen for political reasons. You can find yourself in the wrong place working with people who don't share your views. It can happen for social reasons. You can find yourself looked down upon because you're not good enough in some people's eyes. It can happen for economic reasons, because either because you have a lot less or a lot more than some of the other people that you work with. There are all sorts of reasons why you can find yourself disliked. And of course, it can also happen because of our faith. Find ourselves in situations where our faith, the priorities that our faith gives us, are the very things that make people dislike us the most. That's one of the interesting parts about the story of Daniel that we read part of a moment or two ago. When you read the story, you think initially, as you begin to read the words, that what they don't like about Daniel is they just don't like him because he's going to be over them, and they don't want anybody over them, especially not this foreigner. And so it looks a bit like that. But then as the story progresses, you begin to understand that the standout feature of Daniel's life is his faith in God and the habits that faith has produced in his life. And that's what they don't like, because it was his faith who made him the person he was, and the integrity that came from that faith that gained him the promotion that he got. And so it is against that faith that they mount their attack. They attack the faith. They decided to make it as difficult as they possibly could for him to do his work as a believer in the living God. And this can happen to you today. It's unlikely you'll end up in a lion's den. Well, there are times an office can feel like that, or a factory floor, or a shop. There are times it can feel like that, but there won't literally be lions there unless you work in the zoo. And it can happen for all sorts of reasons. It can happen, for example, because you choose not to work on a Sunday. That can create all sorts of difficulties in an employment environment. I know that sometimes you have to do your fair share of the work, and I'm not saying the Bible says you cannot work on a Sunday. That, I don't think that's what the Bible means by Sabbath rest. But it may be that you choose not to so that you can be in a rhythm of worship and devotion. You want to be in church. You want to be in the place to worship God. And it can be that the hours of your work mean you couldn't make either the morning or the evening service here, or for that matter, anywhere else. And so you choose not to work on that day, and it becomes a matter of difficulty in your place of employment. The problem is your faith. Or it can just be constant mockery because you're a believer. Or it can be the kind of godless and difficult behavior of the people that you spend a lot of the hours of your day with. I remember one young man who came here, wasn't a Christian at the time, who in absolute despair almost one day in his car stopped in the middle of the road somewhere in Belfast and offered up a prayer to God, who at that point in his life he didn't really follow. Prayed to God and he said, "Lord, get me out of this job and get me away from these people and I'll start going to church." Within a month he was in another job in a different group of people, and then he had to make good on his promise. That's a whole other story. But the interesting thing was that what was the biggest vexation in his life at that time was the issue of the attitudes and values of the people that he was spending so much time with day by day. And so he asked God to get him out of it. Or it can just be isolation. You're cold-shouldered. Nobody wants to know you. They deliberately ignore you. They blank you. You know, they turn away. Conversation stops when you enter the room. At times, it can even be done by religious people. You don't even get a bye-ball from all the people in work who are religious, because this is Northern Ireland, and religion isn't about the general principles of what it means to follow Jesus Christ. Religion is about the minutiae of what I believe about some small, obscure verse in the Bible, and if you don't believe that too, you're as good as a pagan. And so even in the workplace, at times, other believers can make it difficult for you. I remember when I was working in Bloomfield as an assistant minister, there were a couple of fellas in the life of our church, and they were a total nightmare. The youth activities took place in a set of halls that were built in the car park, and they were sort of a light construction sort of halls, were meant to be put up for 10 years. You know, a church has put them up for 10 years intending to replace them, and they were, by the time I was in Bloomfield, they were over 30 years old, and actually they haven't replaced them yet. They're still there, although they're talking about doing it. They were talking about doing it when I was there, which is now nearly 30 years ago, but anyway. And they were terrible halls, but because they were of this light form of construction, they were easy to damage, and I don't think there was a part of the halls that these two guys hadn't damaged in the BB or in the youth club or something like that. Their favorite, one of the favorite things they did when I was youth leader there, I was assistant minister there, was they used to use the snooker cues as javelins to see how many holes they could puncture in the ceiling tiles in the hall. Both of them came to faith in my time. It was a magnificent moment. It's just people have been praying for this. It seemed like of the two people least likely to become Christians in the youth club, it would be these two guys. They both became believers inside a few weeks of each other. Transformed the youth club was a joy to go to instead of a complete pain, because these two guys were Christians now, and everybody else who used to join them in their activities because they were the ringleaders, now they didn't have any leaders anymore. The youth club was so easy to manage after that. It was great. One of these guys worked in a particular firm. And from the moment he became a Christian, he came under the pressure of three or four people that he worked with who told him that the Presbyterian Church was no place for anybody who was a true Christian to be, and that if he was a real Christian, he should leave it, he should get baptized, and he should go to a totally different church. And only if he did that could he truly be right with God. And within a few months, he had left our church. He joined a small hall that was only a few hundred yards away from the church. A guy who ran about in jeans and a t-shirt was wearing a three-piece suit and a shirt and tie. He didn't talk to anybody anymore. He completely lost his influence over the group of young people with whom he grew up, and he effectively became completely isolated and away from, and it was people at work who made his life a misery until he did it. Religious people. So you can find it personally tough in the situation at work. What did Daniel do? What did Daniel do when he realized that he was persona non grata at work? He didn't do anything. He didn't do anything. He just kept doing what he had always done. That's what that verse said that we read a moment or two ago. In respect of his faith, he remained faithful. It said that what he did was that he went to his room three times a day and prayed to God as he had always done. He didn't change anything. He just remained faithful, even though he knew where that would lead. He didn't fight fire with fire. He probably could have. He was an able guy. He kept at his work, and he walked with God, and God vindicated him, even though it involved a lion's den. In Daniel 6, it said this, "My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions." My God sent his angel. You know, work can be personally a difficult place, but God has angel armies. That's what the scripture says. He has angel armies. He is the Lord of hosts. And he dispatched just one of those army members to Daniel in the den and vindicated him for his life. Personally, it's tough. It's not easy. You walk into a room and you know they're persona non grata. You know, as a minister, you know, you think, well, you're a minister, it's a cushy job. You never encounter this kind of thing. I've walked into rooms, you know, I've walked into rooms sometimes people didn't expect me to come into, you know. And I've heard people in the midst of condemning basically everything that's really valuable and important to me in the life of this church and other people applauding them, you know. So I know what it feels like to walk into a space where people don't really want you. It's not easy. What did Daniel do? Daniel didn't do anything. He just kept at his work, remained faithful to God, and God sent an angel to vindicate him personally. But work can be a challenge ethically too. The work environment also possesses ethical dilemmas. You could say there were bigger issues and smaller issues. I'm not saying the bigger issues are any more important. I'm just saying they're larger issues. So what I mean? Well, the bigger issues are the ones which raise the question as to whether or not you should be doing the job you're doing at all. For example, working in the arms industry. Should a Christian work in the arms industry? Is that right that you use the gifts and talents God has given you to design machines or pieces of equipment that will be used to kill other people? Should you do that? That's a valid question. Take it another step. Should you be in the military? Should you be a soldier if you're a Christian? Should you be an investment? Because investment means putting money for profit into all sorts of dodgy things across the world. It's kind of like a form of gambling sometimes. If you're a Christian, should you be involved in that? Should you be involved in research? When the research that you do brings pain to animals or other creatures, or when that research could be used for malevolent purposes at the end of the day, should you do research? Should you work for the government? Any government? Should you really give your loyalty to that? These are big questions, major issues. They are valid questions that we need to resolve in our hearts. And in the scriptures, good people worked in difficult jobs. Daniel worked in Babylon. Joseph worked in Egypt. Paul tells us about high-ranking officials in the Roman Curia who had heard the gospel and come to faith in Christ. We assume, he doesn't actually say it in his writings, but from history we know that even from the first century onward, really key individuals in the Roman administration were coming to faith in Jesus Christ and remaining key individuals in the Roman administration. Babylon, Egypt, Rome. So in the Bible, there are examples of people who worked in these difficult situations and who were able to remain faithful to their God within them. What about us? Of course, it's possible to turn a blind eye in work or to become accustomed to that which is all around us, so accustomed to it that we stay there too long. There's an interesting phrase in 2 Peter chapter 2 about Lot. You know that character from the Old Testament who was related to Abraham and he was living in Sodom? And it says of Lot, that righteous man, this is 2 Peter 2 verse 8, that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds he saw and heard. Lot was living in Sodom and he was really vexed about what was going on. You could be in a workplace, you'd be really vexed about what was going on. But the problem with Lot was this. It says that he was tormented in his righteous soul. But he stayed that long that God virtually had to drag him out of the place and he lost his family and he lost his wife. It's possible to become so used to the stuff that's all around you that you stay longer than you should. That's the bigger issues. The smaller issues are the ones that we're more likely to encounter and the ones that are more likely to give us sleepless nights. For example, in work, we see injustice or wrongdoing. We see people being bullied. We see systems being abused and misused in ways that they're not supposed to. What do? Well, we could become a whistleblower. We could go and tell somebody about it. And there's scriptural evidence for people doing that. Mordecai in Esther chapter 6, if you look at Esther chapter 6, you'll see that Mordecai, who was related to Esther, he spotted something going on which was wrong and he informed the authorities about it. And it was only a period of time later that the king couldn't sleep one night and he was getting his secretary to read him over some of the stuff that had been happening. He was catching up in his emails, if you like. So he was checking through and he discovered this record of what Mordecai had done and he promoted Mordecai as a result of discovering that. Mordecai was a whistleblower. You could do that. Or you could use your influence to try and change the workplace. That's what Paul did with Philemon. Philemon was his friend, and he had a slave called Onesimus, and the slave ran away, and he ended up with Paul, which was kind of one of those weird circumstances in life, like the whole Roman world, and Onesimus runs away and ends up bumping into a friend of his master's. You know the weird thing that happens. And so Paul welcomes Onesimus. Onesimus becomes a Christian. Paul sends Onesimus back to Philemon. But here's what he says to him. I'm sending him back to you no longer as a slave, but as a dear brother. He is very dear to me, but even dearer to you, both as a fellow man and as a brother in the Lord. See what Paul was doing here? He was saying to Philemon, you can't treat Onesimus in the same way you used to treat him. You're going to have to set him free now because he's your brother in the Lord. See what Paul was doing? He was using his influence to change the culture. It wasn't his personal workplace, but it was Onesimus' workplace. And Paul was using his influence to do something about it. Or you could just put your head down and do your work so well that you model a different culture. You can challenge the culture around you, like Paul was doing here, run the risk of losing his friendship with Philemon in doing it. You can challenge the culture, or you can put your head down and work differently to the people who work around you. As Paul says to both slaves and masters in both his letter to the Ephesians and his letter to the Colossians, he says, look, here's how you're supposed to be an employer, and here's how you're supposed to be an employee. If you're an employee, you're not working for your employer, you're working for the Lord. And if you're an employer, you don't own the things that you possess. They belong to the Lord, so you better look after them properly. That's what Paul says. So he challenges people to work differently, and by working differently, to change the culture. There are big issues and small issues. What do we do about these things? Guys, we need to talk about these issues. It's hard for one person to resolve them by themselves. Maybe there's nobody in the workplace you can talk to because nobody else is a Christian there. They don't share your outlook or your values. We need to get counsel. We need the prayerful support of other believers. That's why we do pastorate. That's the point of a small group. We can't talk about it here on Sundays. It's just too many people. I couldn't possibly begin to treat all the situations that are before me in church this morning. But in a pastorate, you could begin to get to trust and know other people and begin to be able to share dilemmas that you face in the workplace and get other people's prayer and counsel and support. So you begin to feel, actually, though I am on my own in the office, I'm not on my own because members of my pastorate are praying for me. And I can ask their advice when I come across a difficult subject. I can send somebody a text quickly and say, I've got a really difficult situation this morning. Would you pray for me today? There are ethical issues. Lastly, work can be a challenge spiritually. The workplace is also somewhere we encounter another level of hostility. Not just people and not just the systems and the issues around us, but also what Paul tells us about in Ephesians chapter 6. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. We just prayed the Lord's Prayer this morning in church, as we frequently do. And in that prayer, we pray the line which says, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. It's probably not the correct translation of those words. Here's the correct translation. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. The evil one. There is a person who is determined to create problems for us in following Jesus Christ. And that's just as much in the workplace as anywhere else. You see, the workplace is a place of temptation. The workplace is a place of temptation. We spend a lot of time with people we are not married to. That's a place of temptation. We have opportunities to steal. We could steal money, perhaps, depending on the nature of our work, but we could definitely steal time in that we do things for ourselves in time we are supposed to be giving to the company. We can steal equipment. Might only be a barrel pen. Probably nobody's going to die over that, but people take much larger things than barrel pens. We can steal. There are opportunities there, temptation. But temptation comes in other more subtle ways too, especially over the ultimate loyalties of our lives. Work, for example, can become more important than family. Work can become more important than faith, encroaching on the rhythms of prayer and worship, or putting us in a position where we defend the indefensible. We have a sense of loyalty to the company that we work for or whatever it is we do, and we end up defending things that we know are wrong, that company is guilty of, or that someone in that company has done. But because we feel some sense of loyalty to them, we are either silent when we should speak, or we do worse than that. We speak and we defend what is clearly wrong. Then there's a challenge there to our basic loyalty. Who matters most? Our loyalty to Jesus and the standards and values of his kingdom, or our loyalty to the company we work for? This is a spiritual battle. Something spiritual is going on here. It's not just an unimportant thing. We are being challenged about the basic loyalties of our lives, which is why Paul calls us to be armed and especially to pray. To pray for ourselves and to pray for others. That's what he says in Ephesians chapter 6 when he talks about the armor of God. Put on the armor of God when you go to work. Put it on because it's a situation where a spiritual battle is going on and where you will encounter temptation and you may make the wrong choices. So you need to be protected and especially need to pray for yourselves and for others. Paul says you even need to pray for me. Pray also for me that whenever I speak, words may be given to me so that I fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel for which I am an ambassador in chains. Pray that I may declare it fearlessly as I should. What bothered Paul about his workplace? Paul's work was to be an evangelist, to plant churches across the face of the Roman Empire. What was the biggest temptation for Paul? To be quiet when he should speak. To fail to testify to Jesus because it was going to cost him if he did so. Pray that I may declare the gospel fearlessly as I should. There was the point of temptation for Paul. And he asked for people to pray for him so that he would not fall to the temptation. Twice in those verses, Paul underlines that it is a spiritual battle he faces. Work is a challenging place to be. Loads of debates and discussions about it, even virtually all the time on the radio and in the newspapers. But for the believer, work is a place where we experience hostility to our faith. We experience it personally sometimes in people who make life really difficult for us. What do? We don't do anything. Don't do anything. We trust to God. We remain faithful. It can be a challenge ethically. There are big issues and small issues. What do? We seek the prayerful support and counsel of other believers who can help us. It can be a challenge spiritually. There are dark forces in every area of life, including the workplace. There is an evil one who wants to break our testimony and destroy our witness. What do? We pray. We ask God to give us strength, comfort, help at the point of temptation. If any of this resonates with you, if any of this is a challenge for you in the workplace right now, we'd love to pray with you after service is over. Members of our prayer ministry team would be here, and we'd love to pray with you about that situation. If you're facing maybe a big dilemma or a big decision, we'd love to support you and help you with that or to pray over that issue with you. And we'll be available to do that after the service this morning. Can I encourage you to think about doing that? Can I encourage you, if you're not already in a pastorate, to go and find a pastorate to join, a place where you can get support, especially if you're facing big challenges in the workplace right now? Be a brilliant place to be, to get friendship and mutual support from other people who are facing perhaps the same temptations and difficulties in the places where they work.